What's going on, guys? It's your producer, KB, Kyle Bennett. Unfortunately, no new episode of Just Another Football Podcast this week. Connor was feeling a little under the weather. It was his allergies, and then he thinks he ate something kind of wonky. So we pushed our new episode back to next week, so hopefully we'll be running back at full force then. But to keep you guys entertained, we're popping out one of the interviews from last week's episode as its own individual from the Vault podcast. So you're going to enjoy Connor sit down with the one and only Mark Schofield. We'll be back soon. Don't worry, we're bringing the content. Make sure you guys subscribe on Apple Podcasts. Leave those 5-star ratings and reviews. Keep them coming. They've been flowing in like crazy. It's awesome to see. And if you don't have an iPhone to use Apple Podcasts, you can check us out on Spotify, Google Podcasts. We should be on Stitcher very soon, as well as a bunch of other podcast platforms very, very soon. Once we get some more episodes out, they'll approve us. But check us out. Keep it coming. We love the support. And like I said, here is Connor sit down with the one and only Mark Schofield from the Vault.
Mark Schofield with the NFL Wire now. He's new to the NFL Wire. If you haven't heard of him already, you are missing out. This man knows his stuff. He's been on with Bleeding Green with the with Michael Kist. He's really great at football. Mark, thanks for joining us.
Connor, it's great to be with you, buddy. I'm excited to talk some football. Excited to, you know, looking to talk about a couple of different things. We got quarterbacks. We got Darius Slay. So it's gonna be a fun little show.
Yes, it is. So right off the bat, did you honestly see Tom Brady leaving New England? Because I did not.
You know, it's funny, Connor. I was on a show out in San Francisco the day after they lost to the Titans, and people were asking me, obviously, you know, is Tom Brady going to leave? Is he going to go somewhere else? And I said, you know what? I think he stays, but if he does leave, watch out for Tampa Bay. I think Tampa Bay will be a fascinating environment, fascinating fit for him. And I think sort of as this process went on and as we sort of heard, you know, reports coming out of New England that maybe the relationship with him and Bill Belichick, I'm afraid somewhat that phone calls weren't going well. I started to come around more and more to the idea, Connor, that he was going to leave. And no, I will say this, you know, at the combine, there was that report that came out Thursday from Jeff Darlington that, you know, it was more than likely that he was going to leave. Right. And other people said that, you know, I was out at a bar that night, but the night before, that Wednesday night of the combine, with a bunch of the Patriots beat writers, you know, and it was like a morgue. It was like a wake, you know, there was a lot of anxiety, a lot of belief that Tom Brady was going to leave. And so as this process sort of went on, I came around to the idea that, look, he was going to leave, that he was going to find, you know, a different place to play in 2020. You know, I'm excited for him, you know, as somebody that studies quarterbacks, you know, I'm excited to see how he looks in this Bruce Arians offense. I'm excited to see what he's going to do for guys like an O.J. Howard or Chris Godwin. You know, I think those are guys to watch. I think they're in positions to have huge years next year. But at the same time, look, I grew up a Patriots fan. Before I was somebody writing about the game, before I was somebody talking about the game professionally, I was a Pats fan. I mean, Tom Brady's 7 months younger than me. I mean, I can sort of track my life with Tom Brady as a constant. I mean, when he first started playing for the Patriots, I was in law school. I was single. I was looking to be a lawyer. And now here I am. I'm not a lawyer. I'm covering the game. I'm married with two kids. And, you know, my life has changed. But Tom Brady's always sort of been there as a Patriots quarterback. And so it's different. But I'm excited for him. I think it's a great spot for him. And I can't wait to see him on the field.
So let's just start. We'll talk to about the Buccaneers side, because that's a lot to talk about there and unpack. And it's exciting to see him being on a different team. But when you look at it from the Patriots side, I would argue that they kind of, I don't know, they really look like they lost this bet that he would come back. Because I'm sure if you expect Tom Brady to come back, you figure out the cap that way with his contract no matter what, because he's coming back to play for you. It's not about the money really to him, in my opinion. But you saw after DeAndre Hopkins got traded, you saw after the Stephon Diggs got traded, you would think that accelerated his decision. Okay, the Patriots aren't really taking me seriously about this weapons that I'm rumored to want to have. You would think they kind of got caught with their pants down here. Would you look at their cap situation? Honestly, my man, they can't afford to take on Andy Dalton's current contract. They can't afford to take on Cam Newton's current contract. It's hard to peg a quarterback to them right now when you look at their cap situation. Again, the Panthers are replacing Cam Newton with Teddy Bridgewater. We already know the Bengals are replacing with Joe Burrow. So the leverage there is really gone now that the Bears traded for Nick Foles. But, I mean, I guess if you're the Patriots, because now Joe Thuney signed the franchise tag, so now your cap is still where it is. I don't know, man. I don't know what they do at quarterback. Is Jared Stidham really going to be what they're going to do?
I think so. I think they have to. And it almost makes you think, and I was wondering this, and from talking to some other people that cover the team, I started to be convinced of this more and more. You know, people sort of thought that this offseason, oh, they'll find a way to, you know, make one last run, one last ride. They'll load up for one final ride with Brady here. Carr, I think they tried to do that last year. I think last year was New England's sort of final ride with Tom Brady. You know, when you look at the fact that they started the year with, you know, a first-round chosen wide receiver, you know, with N'Keal Harry. They do something that they don't usually do, which is to draft somebody early at the wide receiver spot. You know, they obviously had Josh Gordon. They brought in Antonio Brown. Like, they loaded up with some weapons for Tom Brady last year, and then they did something that was very unpatriot-like. They had made a panic trade for Mohamed Sanu, giving up a second-round pick because they wanted to make sure they had a weapon for Tom Brady that wasn't named Julian Edelman. So I think that sort of last year was their final ride with Brady. And, you know, something that also sort of convinced me that, look, this was going to happen, this was going to end badly, was when Dante Scarnecchia announced his retirement. You know, because if you're in that building and you think, yeah, we're going to load up for one more run here in 2020, you probably don't retire if you're Dante Scarnecchia. You stick around. But he announces his retirement. You know, and I remember I sent a text to somebody I know that covers the team that's in the building all the time. And I was like, is this move panic time now? And he sort of laughed it off when I saw him at the comedy. He was like, yeah, I think that was the death knell right there. When Dante said that he was retiring, it was the sign that, look, this was over. And so as far as for what they do going forward, I think that their plan is Jared Stidham, that they're going to see what they have in this kid. They're going to see if he can handle the position. And if not, they're going to be in a position to draft somebody early next year. Now, I know that people are talking about, you know, potentially a Cam Newton, potentially an Andy Dalton. Like you said, they have a Joe Thuney situation. They're still up against him in the cap. They might trade Joe Thuney now. They might tag him and trade him. They might be in a sort of a rebuilding situation around Jared Stidham. And so it's going to be interesting to see. I do think that what they do is they roll with Stidham. They probably acquire a veteran, like I say, a Brian Hoyer, who's probably, you know, surplus out in Indianapolis right now with Philip Rivers coming to town and Jacoby Brissett still there. Mm-hmm. And they see what the Stidham could ask. If it goes badly, and it goes badly as some Patriots fans think it might, they might be 4-12. And they'll be in a position to perhaps move up and draft, say, Trevor Lawrence or Justin Fields next year. They have a bad schedule next year, Connor. Like, they have trips to Seattle, a trip to L.A. to play the Rams, a trip to L.A. to play the Chargers. They've obviously still got the first-place schedule. You look at what the Bills have done. You look at what the Dolphins have done. The AFC East is going to be tougher sledding for them anyway. They could go 7-9, you know, like, I guess we know just that, so 7-10 or 4-13 or something like that, given the 17-game schedule. So, yeah, this looks bad.
This is crazy. This is crazy. This is unheard of. Bill Belichick. This is what an exciting time in football.
And you look at what they're losing on the defensive side of the ball. I mean, I know everybody's focusing on Tom Brady, and rightly so, as the greatest quarterback of all time. They've lost Kyle Van Noy. They've lost Jamie Collins. They've lost Danny Shelton. They've lost Daron Harmon. Like, they've lost Alandon Roberts. I mean, they've lost a lot on the front of their defense. And they have guys that they can slide in, like a Juwan Bentley or Chase Winovich, you know, a Lawrence Guy. So they still have pieces. Mm-hmm. But, you know, they were up against it from a cap perspective, which, again, points to the idea that last year was their final run with Brady. It fell short, woefully short, if you ask some Patriots fans. And now they have to sort of retool things a bit, and it might not be an instant turnaround.
So you mentioned a quarterback that I kind of was like, maybe they'll look into that again because of the cap situation. I'm looking at Jacoby Brissett over there in Indianapolis now. I know Brian Hoyer makes sense because you could fit him in with the type of contract you give him. But I'm looking at Jacoby Brissett. I'm thinking maybe Bill's like, well, I mean, I did like him when he was here, but he was an added luxury at the time when we traded him for Dorsett. Maybe we can try it again with Brissett.
Yeah, I mean, they could do that. You do wonder how Frank Reich is going to handle that quarterback role, because maybe he looks at Brissett and says, look, it's going to be a tough situation, and I'll send him to the bench. You know, maybe we're better off with Brian Hoyer as our backup, and then Brissett becomes sort of something that could be available via trade or something like that. You know, and it would have surprised me. I mean, I was reading a story today from Bleacher Report. They did a great sort of deep dive on, you know, you look back a couple of seasons, the Patriots had Brady, Garoppolo, and Brissett in their quarterback room. I mean, three guys that were starting quarterbacks last year. Mm-hmm. And a lot of people around the league were very envious of that situation. And they knew that Belichick wouldn't be able to hand on to them all. You know, he was going to have to start, you know, moving guys to acquire talent at different positions. And so, you know, Belichick did like Brissett, and the organization loved Brissett. And, you know, the Patriots are one of those teams that sort of, if you look at how they evaluate the quarterback position traditionally, they're one of the few remaining teams that sort of believes in the quote-unquote Parcells rules, right? Mm-hmm.
Yeah.
You know, the guys that are multiple-year starters and 30 wins or 30 starts and 23 wins and 60% completion percentage. And Brissett checked a lot of those boxes, and so did Garoppolo. And so did Stidham, as a matter of fact. Mm-hmm. And so, you know, I think I do like Brissett. Another guy that went to bat for him is the guy himself, Bill Parcells, who has a relationship with Jacoby Brissett. And so, you know, there are a lot of people in that organization that were believers in him. Would it surprise me if they found a way to bring him back? No. I mean, I think he would be somebody that could certainly run that offense, has a ton of familiarity with it. But I still think that Stidham's going to be the guy they turn to.
Yeah, so just last on the Patriots and Stidham. Let everybody know right now, everything Mark has said has been great points, and I completely agree, because you do have to realize they did try with Keneal Harry, they did try with Josh Gordon, they brought Antonio Brown in, which Belichick would have never signed off on earlier in the year, in his career. All great points, so it makes complete sense. It looks like this might have been Brady's plan all along, and we just missed it. So some of us missed it. But look, at Stidham, I mean, I like watching the quarterback position. I love pulling up the film and seeing what guys do at college. He has some tools at Auburn. He did show some tools at Auburn and have some quarterback talent. It's just, do you think his quarterback IQ is on the same level as Josh McDaniels?
No, I mean, I don't think it is, but I think it can get there. And what's interesting, Connor, about, you know, Jared Stidham, who, look, you look at my Twitter header photo, it's me and Stidham. I mean, how opportunistic is that, man? And from getting a chance to talk to him down at the Senior Bowl, you know, 2 years ago, you know, he's somebody that clearly was in two different offenses, first at Baylor and then at Auburn, that don't really translate that well to the NFL game. You know, but then you see him down at the Senior Bowl and he's playing for Kyle Shanahan and his system, and you can see sort of the light go off in his head. And, you know, when I got a chance to talk to him, one of the things I asked him was, like, what was your favorite route design to run this week? And he sort of laughed at me. Just like all of them, man. Every single one of them. And you get the impression that this was a kid that knew that, look, the Baylor offense, the Auburn offense, like, these weren't, you know, ideal NFL offenses. You know, they weren't, you know, an environment where you could get a full sense of who he is as a quarterback, who he could be in the NFL. But Kyle Shanahan's more pro-style offense was something where he excelled at it and he loved to run it. So I think that he'll, you know, he'll get there. And another thing to point out is you talk to people, you know, that were at OTAs, that were at training camp. The growth that Stidham made from rookie OTAs to training camp was incredible. He came in from rookie OTAs, and Connor, people would tell me that they were just going through walkthroughs where it's like, you know, not even half speed, like quarter speed, and he'd still throw interceptions. Mm-hmm. And people were looking around like, what are we doing here? Who is this kid? And then he comes into training camp, and he plays extremely well. I mean, I remember I did a piece for Matt Wadley's Rookie Scouting Portfolio and him sort of reading a cougar coverage, which is like a cover two trap where, you know, the cornerback acts like he's going vertical and he actually uses a man turn. And they're running a go-flat combination. So it looks like you get, you know, man coverage on the outside. You're going to throw the flat route to where that corner is. But in this coverage scheme, the corner does that man turn, turns his back to the quarterback to bait you into throwing that route to the flat. And so he does this man turn, the cornerback does, and then peels off to trap the flat route. And Stidham sees it, pulls it down, and scrambles for the first down. But that's an advanced read from a rookie quarterback. And so, you know, I think that, you know, he's going to get there. It's just a matter of time.
I'm going to be paying a ton of attention to the Patriots this year because I want to see how Bill Belichick answers to all this. I just want to see how that team, because, I mean, you did mention the defensive guys, but he's used to that, I feel like. That's one coach I would trust to deal with those type of losses. But, I mean, losing the best quarterback of all time, it's going to be fun to watch. I'm just intrigued by the idea of it, and I will be watching Jared Stidham see what he does. But focusing on Brady and Tampa Bay now, this is the perfect situation for Bruce Arians trying to get a Super Bowl ring. That's basically what it seems to me. He gets the Grizzly veteran back like he had Kurt Warner and Carson Palmer. He gets the guy with the highest quarterback IQ to run his offense. There's so many, obviously, everybody knows they would Tom Brady over Jameis Winston is a huge upgrade, and with that coaching staff, they're going to take off. But, I mean, they still have holes on the defense, but I think a lot of people are looking at him like, eh, you know, Tom Brady ended the season like that last year. He's 43 years old. He's losing it, is what people would think. He's obviously doing this to prove them wrong and to have weapons like Chris Godwin. I was joking with people, I'm not going to draft O.J. Howard ever again, I swear to God. And now that they just got Tom Brady, I'm like, I'm going to draft O.J. Howard again in fantasy this year, just to let everybody know. But I like it. I think the offense could take off. And then, I mean, you hear rumors about them trying to get Todd Gurley. Melvin Gordon's out there and his market's dwindling. I mean, you got to like what they're doing. It's just the offensive line is what kills me because I'm not a big guy on Donovan Smith. I think they definitely need to upgrade that left tackle position. But now, I mean, that you get Tom Brady there, free agents are going to be attractive. I could see Jason Peters going there.
Yep. I mean, look, I think you have to look at Tampa Bay now. You know, I'd say probably right up there with New Orleans as favorites in that NFC South.
Absolutely.
And potentially in the conference. You look at what Tom Brady's going to do for that offense, number one. I mean, we know what he's going to do. There's going to be a much more efficient offense. You're not going to have a quarterback who's going to throw 30 interceptions. And, you know, maybe Tom Brady doesn't throw the deep ball, which we traditionally associate with Bruce Arians. But you also look at Arians' offensive concepts. There's a lot of flood concepts. There's a lot of, you know, multiple level reads and things like that. And he'll be able to get it done. And so, yeah, I think that's a big part of where they're going to be. I think if you look at this Tampa Bay defense, they were getting better down the stretch. They're going to be now in a situation where they're not facing short fields all the time. You know, it's a situation where your quarterback's going to take better care of the football. They're going to extend some drives and things like that. He's not going to put his defense behind the eight ball. You look at now reports from Adam Schefter and others that free agents are calling, like, look, that's where I want to go. I want to play with Tom Brady. They're going to definitely get some more pieces in. Maybe it is a Gordon or a Gurley or who knows who else they could add around them. It's going to be a destination for players. And then, you know, the final component of the whole, like, Tom Brady thing, and this can't be overstated, Connor. I've said this so many times in my years covering Tom Brady that, you know, I have this, like, line that I always say, you know, you get on an elevator with Tom Brady, how quickly does he bring up the fact that he was picked 199? Probably before you get to your floor, he's going to be telling you how every other team passed him, including the New England Patriots a couple of times. He's been driven by that chip on his shoulder. He named his production company 199 Productions to remind everybody that he hasn't forgotten that fact. Well, now he has the ability not just to keep reminding people of that, but he has the fact that Bill Belichick perhaps gave up on him. And he's going to use that. He's going to use that to go out there and prove everybody wrong. Like, oh, you couldn't play. You said I couldn't play when I was 43. Yeah, look what I just did. I mean, I am sure he is looking at this right now as I can go shove it down everybody else's throat one more time on my way out the door that said I was too old, that I was over the hill, that I couldn't run Bruce Arians' offense, that I wasn't good enough to be in New England, that they passed me up for Jared Stidham. Yeah, I would be stunned if he doesn't come out and have, like, not a career year, but something close next season.
I agree with you. I think a lot of people are missing the little points to this too. You look at Bruce Arians, he went to the Cardinals when they weren't really well thought of as an organization, completely made them a contender with quarterbacks that you wouldn't expect him to do that with. Because nobody thought of Kurt Warner when he went there. And he was supposed to be back up to Matt Leinart. That's what they were hoping for, to groom him. Yeah. Then you look at Carson Palmer, who got traded from the Raiders to him for next to nothing after he was a complete bust of the Raiders. And again, he's a playoff contender with them. That's a given he's going to be with Brady, honestly. That's a given. Now he's going to Tampa Bay, an organization that hasn't been thought of since really when Gruden won the Super Bowl with them. And he's most likely going to take them, if not to the Super Bowl, at least to the NFC Championship again. The one really hole I see on their team is the offensive tackle position and corner. I think once they get another solid corner, they're going to be fine. Their pass rush is great. Jason Pierre-Paul, Shaquille Barrett, I mean,
yeah.
If they bring, now, if they, look, yeah, go ahead.
By Britton and Brady, they could do something entirely different with that 14th pick. I mean, everybody had sort of, you know, looked at it and said, oh, Jacob Eason or maybe Jordan Love, they're going to go quarterback at 14. You know, now with free agency, the way it's changed things, the board looks different. Mm-hmm. I mean, I think if you had asked me, like, before free agency started, like, when are we going to see quarterbacks come off the board, I might have told you, look, and I have told people that, you know, a week ago, you might see five quarterbacks in the top 14. You know, now, you know, maybe you still see some, but I don't think you see one to Tampa Bay at 14. And that's going to potentially push guys down the board at that offensive tackle position. You might see a guy like Tristan Wirfs there. You might see a Mekhi Becton there. You might see, you know, Jedrick Willis there. Or, you know, what are these other guys that people are talking about? Josh Jones from Houston, yeah. Or Austin Jackson from USC. So they could address tackle there. This Brady move gives them some flexibility where they can address positions of need and not just trying to, like, force the quarterback pick to get a guy.
Right. I mean, you look at, yeah, Tristan Wirfs is what I would assume that they go now if he's around there in that pick. But, I mean, also, you could also go quarter now, so you're right. They could get a Christian Fulton, then get a C.J. Henderson maybe, perhaps. So,
yeah,
it's exciting. I'm excited to see what he does down there, and I don't want to continue to just take up the whole entire, because we can talk about this for hours, but I'm very excited to see what happens down there. So let's talk about Rivers and with the Colts. I like it personally. I think he's finally getting off. When you watched Phillip Rivers last year, a lot of his turnovers were because he had to get the ball out quick enough, and it just wasn't happening. He wasn't working. His passes were accurate. So now you give him the Colts offensive line, and you give him a coach he's already familiar with in Frank Reich, and then you also have Nick Sirianni too. Perfect situation. Couldn't draw it up any better. The one-year deal to me is awesome because you did hear reports that he was saying, hey, I'm telling my next team don't draft my predecessor in this draft, though. I want to be committed to. But now you take this one-year deal and you open up the floodgates to draft a quarterback in the second or third round still because you got DeForest Buckner in the trade. Yeah. So, I mean, how do you feel on it? I feel like Phillip Rivers is going to have a bounce-back year.
I think so, too. I think Rivers is in a good position to have sort of a bounce-back season. And Indianapolis, I think, did the right thing. I think, you know, the trade that they made to get DeForest was a good move to help their defensive line. But they still have picks at 34 and 44. You know, they still get two early second-round picks. So they can still be in a situation where, you know, they don't have to, similar to what we were just talking about with Tampa Bay, they don't have to force a pick at 13 for a quarterback. They could wait. And if a guy that they like a Love, like an Eason, sort of falls into that late 20s kind of range, which could happen, you know, now with more teams addressing quarterback via free agency, they could, like, then take a swing on a guy as a, you know, they could trade back into the play first round, draft a guy that's going to need some time anyway, like an Eason, like a Love, and it won't cost them a ton. Or somebody could fall to them at 34. And so they're in a very good place there. I think he's going to be behind a better offensive line. You look at Quentin Nelson, get Costanzo back, I think is a huge part of this as well. He's going to be better protected. And I think the scheme fit makes better sense for where Phillip is right now as a quarterback. Like, you know, you look at how Frank Reich structures that offense. It's obviously a lot of quick game, West Coast passing concepts. You look at how he handled Andrew Luck when he was coming back from injury. Didn't seem like he had the shoulder back fully. Was trying to make some throws downfield, and they were a bit of a struggle at times. Like, I think this is a great fit for him. I think it's an environment where he'll be better protected, get the ball out quickly. You know, obviously get the chance to play in Lucas Oil, a nice controlled, sterile environment. It's a good situation for him as well. I think this is a good move for Indianapolis. It gives him a quarterback for the now. The one-year prove-it deal I kind of like, too, because if he still has, you know, something left, they can say, look, you know, maybe we draft somebody, they don't have to play right away. We can go the Mahomes route, sit him for a year or two. Rivers can do what he has to do. I think it's a good fit for Indianapolis. I think it's a good fit for Phillip Rivers.
Right. I just don't think it takes him out of the quarterback market. But like you said, they don't have to force anything now with those two second-round picks. But the best situation is they got DeForest Buckner. I would give up 13th pick any day for DeForest Buckner.
Yeah. Oh yeah.
So you look at 34.
Such a smart move.
Absolutely. I mean, this especially when he's still in his prime, because you see people trading for defensive linemen that are even older than that. But anyway, so you look at I would, if I had to pick a quarterback for them, I would definitely pick Jacob Eason. I think Jacob Eason would really benefit from being with a head coach like Frank Reich. So you would have to.
I mean, I
go ahead.
I think that's exactly right, Connor. I mean, you wanted to, if you're Indianapolis, like, let me look at it this way. Let me put it this way. If you're looking at a guy like Love or Eason, you know, you're going to want to have a situation where the team that drafts them, or if your team, you're a fan of the team that drafts one of those guys, has had sort of a proven track record of developing quarterbacks. And Frank Reich has that. You know, you look at what he was able to do with Wentz, you look at even what he did a little bit with Jacoby Brissett, even though it didn't fully pan out, mm-hmm. how he handled Andrew Luck. Like, there's a track record there of developing quarterbacks and getting them to learn the system, learn the game, and play well. And so I think a guy like one of those two that could use some season and Eason or Love, it makes sense for Indianapolis. Another name I'll throw into the mix, and this might be a scenario where they could wait, perhaps grab this guy at 44, is Jake Fromm. And I know Jake Fromm doesn't move the needle for a ton of people.
I was about to say, a lot of people are going to get sick now. But no,
he's a game manager. He's, you know, a system quarterback. He's limited physically. I think there are a handful of situations where Jake Fromm could, dare I say, thrive in the National Football League. He might be one of the more scheme-limited quarterbacks in this entire draft class. Like, I think there's four teams where it could work and, like, you know, 28 teams where it just is not going to work. I think Indianapolis, Chicago, Tennessee, New England were those four scenarios where Jake Fromm would be a guy that could have a successful NFL career in those types of offenses and systems. And with Indianapolis, it's because, again, West Coast offense, Lucas Oil Stadium, you know, he's not going to have to face a ton of severe weather situations. You know, that brings the hand size into question. But I think you could step in and run that offense and run it well. I think you could step in and run Chicago's offense and run it really well. And so, you know, I think if they decide, look, we don't have this pick of 13 now because of the Buckner trade, which makes sense. At 34, somebody at another position falls into our lap, whether it's, you know, a corner or something like that they want to address. And they just want to wait. And Fromm is there at 44. And that wouldn't surprise me at all. I think he would be a good fit for what they do offensively, what they do schematically. And it would be one of those situations where Fromm could actually have success as an NFL QB.
Right. When I look at Jake Fromm, I'm thinking honestly, now that I paid Jordan Love to go to the Colts in the beginning at 13, I thought that would be a good fit there. But now I don't think, obviously, they traded away the pick. And now I don't think it's going to happen, because I think a lot of people are sleeping on the Saints for Jordan Love. I think a lot of people don't bring up him to the Saints a lot. I could definitely see them trying to make a move for him, because I do believe this is Drew Brees' last season. Just throwing it out there.
Yeah.
I think it's his last season. I think he would be a great fit with Sean Payton. And then I also think Jake Fromm would, too. I think you could look at different types of quarterbacks, because Sean Payton knows how to get the best out of the quarterback position and make picks with him there. But, I mean, yeah, I agree with you. Also, you look at Indianapolis, they do need a corner, like you said. A wide receiver to complement T.J. Hilton's also needed, too. Yeah. And now that you got Rivers there, and you let Ebron go, and you're going to go ahead and go with Jack Doyle now, you're going to look at the wide receiver market. I think they have a I wouldn't be surprised if they have a set if some kind of sense of Chenault falls to them, because I think he'd be perfect for them if he stays healthy.
Yeah. I mean, that look, Chenault is, before all this Brady stuff happens, you know, I was telling anybody that would listen, look, if Chenault's on the board at 23 and they don't take LaVisca Chenault, I'm flying to Foxborough and throwing a fit, because I absolutely love this kid. And so, I mean, if he sort of slips to 34 for Indianapolis, my God, turn him apart. I'm such a huge fan of his game. I'm such a huge fan of, you know, how Colorado used him. You talk to Steven Montez, their quarterback at the combine, and he's like, look, we line the guy up, running back, quarterback, tight end, X receiver, Z receiver, slot receiver. Like, we put him everywhere. And somebody else asked him a question, like, what was his favorite route to throw? And he was like, LaVisca. Like, if he had one-on-one coverage, it was a good route to throw. Like, that's how good he was. And I think he'll be even better in the NFL when he gets, you know, competent, consistent quarterback play. So, yeah, I'm all aboard the LaVisca Chenault train.
Yeah, I agree. Obviously, it's just the injury history. I think that's what a lot of people are down on him for. But what big wide receivers don't get injured nowadays, man? It happens.
Yeah.
He has the talent.
Yeah.
He's going to be – I Put him with Phillip Rivers, and we'll see what happens. All right. So I pitched something earlier on the show about Cam Newton, because now that they signed Teddy Bridgewater, it's over. I don't think they're going to be able to get a trade done for him at all, especially with that injury history. It's going to have to be a release, unless some team comes out of nowhere and is incredibly desperate and doesn't think they'll be able to sign him on the open market. But I pitched that I think his best fit would be with the Redskins and back with Ron Rivera, because I think Dwayne Haskins would be a perfect situation for him to sit for a season, regroup, get this new offensive coach in, since you're already going, it's your second year going through another offensive coordinator, another play caller already. It's going to be your third since Bill Callahan was interim coach. That's why I think would be the best fit for Cam Newton is Washington, because, look, I think you're looking at somebody whose body's broken down on him and at a position where quarterbacks of the mobile variety start breaking down. I think if you want to prove to be a starter, your best fit is with Ron Rivera and the Redskins.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's ideal. I think when you look at how Washington's going to look schematically, obviously Washington's offensive coordinator, Scott Turner.
Right, also that.
Obviously, North Turner's son and former Carolina Panthers offensive coordinator. And, somebody that, the offensive scheme is going to be something that, Cam Newton has been running for the past couple of years now. Sort of that downfield, more vertical passing game, but with a blend of RPOs and things like that mixed in. So I think that scheme fit makes a ton of sense. And if, Washington is now able to sort of sign Cam Newton via free agency, because it does look like he might get released, yeah, that does make a ton of sense. Another situation I think would make sense, even though they're telling us that they're set at quarterback for right now, would be the Chargers. I know they're saying, look, Tyrod Taylor's going to be our guy. Mm-hmm. Tyrod Taylor is the quarterback here. I still think that maybe they do that and draft somebody, and maybe they're happy with the quarterbacks they're looking at to draft at six. Then they think maybe these guys will be closer to ready than we're thinking they will be. But I think that offense, too, sort of a mix of the downfield stuff with some RPO, with some quick game, would be a good fit for Cam Newton. But I do like Washington. I think that's probably the best fit for him. Whether it happens or not remains to be seen.
Yeah, because we all know how Daniel Snyder feels about Dwayne Haskins. Yeah. I just think the situation for him would be best is to sit. We all thought that coming out. Everybody that followed him thought he should sit on the bench a little bit. Even Jake Gruden wouldn't even hesitate to put him in. So I think if he just sits and regroups, he'll be fine, because he has a talent. I just think he needs to sit back and learn the system a little bit more, have Cam show him how it's done too as a former MVP. So I love it there. But before we start talking about, because we're already going 30 minutes into this, wow. We could just talk forever, I swear. But
there we go.
Before we go into the last, because we're going to talk about the Justin Herberts and the Tuas and the Burrows of the world, but I know you go on Bleeding Green and you have a show talking with Kiss, so Eagles fans are already going to be familiar with you. I would be bewildered not to talk to you about this right now. The Eagles get Darius Slay. I think that's a good move. I know that a lot of people are looking at his age and thinking, well, that's not really what the picture Howie Roseman painted, but I don't think Howie Roseman painted this picture that we're going to go young, because you look at the years prior, he extended Brandon Graham without hesitation. Now, they have no choice but to keep Malik Jackson due to his contract, and he's going up there. You go out and sign Javon Hargrave, which is one of the most underrated free agent acquisitions, especially with what he's going to be able to require to do in this defense. But you get Darius Slay, and I think a lot of people question what the direction is there because of the age, but to me, I think this is a great move. You get the number one corner you desperately needed. I know you got rid of Malcolm Jenkins, but I think you just put a price tag of what you value at that role, and Jalen Mills' contract proved that to you, since he's going to be essentially his replacement right now. But what do you think about Darius Slay?
I think it's a great move for Philadelphia. I know a lot of people are sort of wondering about, Darius Slay had a down year last year, whether it's PFF graded or whatever. This is somebody that thrives sort of at the catch point, and he thrives with that ability to sort of click and close at the cornerback position. Obviously, when you look at him on film last year, he had a pick six against Arizona, had a couple of other plays in that Arizona game, some of his other games last year. He shows that ability to sort of play an off technique, off coverage, read the quarterback and the receiver at the same time, drive down to the catch point and disrupt the receiver and the football at that catch point, and sometimes make plays on the football. That fits extremely well with what Jim Schwartz asks his corners to do. You know, anybody that studied the Eagles and Jim Schwartz, you know, sometimes he's got those guys on an island, but in off technique, giving a bit of a cushion, letting stuff happen in front of them, ask them to come up and make tackles, disrupt things at the catch point, not get beaten deep over the top. You know, we all know it makes you sometimes susceptible to that double move because you want to bite down on it, making sure you're going to get there, and then you get caught out of position. But Slay thrives in that technique. Slay thrives in that sort of off alignment. And so I think this is a perfect fit for what Jim Schwartz asks his cornerbacks to do. And so, look, I just got done writing the piece over for USA Today Touchdown Wire on 13 different players that are going to thrive in their new environment. You know, whether it's like a guy like Teddy Bridgewater or a guy like Kyle Van Noy or a guy like, you know, DeAndre Hopkins. And Slay was on that list for me. Because I look at him, I watch the film again, watch more of him this morning, seeing how he was used in Detroit when he was at his best. And it fits so well what Jim Schwartz asked his corners to do. So, yeah, I'm a big fan of this.
Well, yeah, so I was watching Darius Slay film too. So what I gathered from last year was, and the last 2 years, to be honest with you, this is not Matt Patricia's type of corner. Or something's wrong there. I don't think they were using him to his best ability. I think he was performing while being uncomfortable. And, of course, the hamstring injury happened last year, too. But you mentioned Jim Schwartz. I mean, this is the corner he drafted. Like, he drafted Darius Slay in the NFL. So we know what we're getting. I mean, at least the defensive coordinator knows what he's getting in this corner. They pursued him hard. To me, getting rid of Jenkins is saying I don't value him in his role anymore at the price tag he's demanding. We can get that production because they obviously believe Jalen Mills can do this, or they don't make this move.
I'm going to be interested, Connor, to see Mills make this transition on a consistent basis, you know, to make that transition to the safety spot. But you don't move on from a Malcolm Jenkins without the belief that you've got the guy in-house and Jalen Mills to replace him. You know, and Mills certainly had some struggles at times, but, you know, perhaps this is a role that he's better suited to run. And so, you know, I think you sort of trust that the people in the building know what they're doing. And getting Darius Slay, I think, is going to help. So I do think he's a much better fit for what they're doing schematically.
Yeah, I couldn't agree more. And, I mean, Malcolm Jenkins is a great player. To me, I think a lot of people are like, well, they got rid of him because of age. No, I think it really was just they didn't value what he asked for what they made him do last year. Because, again, he played 399 snaps in the box. That was the most he played in any snaps, any position on the field. Clearly, they think Jalen Mills can do this. It'll be interesting to see because part of me thinks he can, and then part of me thinks, oh, it's Jalen Mills. So we'll see how it goes. But I love it. And then, I mean, you got Yannick out here teasing us now, putting a bunch of I don't know about that. I've seen him do that for the Giants too. I've heard people talk about the Jets being in on him. What a defensive line, though. That would be fun to think about.
That would be an incredible defensive line, putting Yannick up front with those guys, man. I mean, Hargraves on the inside, which I also think is a massive acquisition, too. Yeah, that would be tough.
If people, I mean, we don't have enough time to keep going over this, but if people really understood that Hargrave, because when you watch, I pegged him as the most underrated player in the 2016 draft, because when you watch his motor on film back when he was in college, that was a guy that you could tell would be a threat as an interior pass rusher. And then you look at what he did in Pittsburgh, he wasn't really asked to do that as much. He had 4 sacks this year. I think he had around 360 pass rushing snaps. It wasn't – the year before he had 7, and he even had way less pass rushing snaps. I think he had 253. So you're looking at a guy who's going to go into Jim Schwartz's defense and just be told to attack, 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 probably see a double of those pass rushing snaps. This is a guy who can get 10 sacks in a season. I fully believe that. I don't think people really – they really underestimate this guy's motor.
Yeah, no, I think that's exactly right. And, you know, I know people have wondered about the change from, you know, a 3-4 where he's more of a nose to, you know, more of a 4-3 where it'd be more of a 3 technique at times. Just watch him on film, watch him dating back to college. Like, he's going to handle the transition fine. Don't worry about it.
Yeah, I'm not even worried. So – let's finish up talking about the quarterbacks real quick. The best fits you think for these college quarterbacks, because you seem like you already have them off the top of your head. We all know Burrow's going to Bengals. Let's not even waste our time with that. I think Burrow and Zach Taylor are going to work. I think Zach Taylor needed a more decisive, quick-thinking quarterback like Burrow. I think it's going to work out. I think a lot of people are not talking about that as much just because we all know that he's going to go there. But Tua... it's interesting because you think the Chargers, and then you look at some other teams, like, hey, maybe the Redskins aren't sold on Dwayne Haskins since that was a little bit of a rumor. I mean, obviously, that's BS. And then you look at the Dolphins. I mean, there's now the Dolphins are looking even stronger a little bit now, too. I think a lot of people are like, well, they're making all these free agent acquisitions. That's not how you build your team. But, I mean, they didn't sign bad players. And then they signed most of the players they signed already have history of Brian Flores, so he knows how to use them.
Yeah.
Tua there looks stronger now. I think this all these free agent moves is you signaling we're going to trade up and get Tua and make sure we get him.
Yeah, I mean, I think Tua would definitely fit thematically in what they're going to be doing. You know, you get Chan Gailey, obviously a guy that brought the spread offense to the NFL, and so there's going to be, you know, some familiarity there. You know, I do think that if you're looking from Tua's perspective and the best fit for him, I almost would say Carolina. And now I know, look, they just sort of signed Teddy Bridgewater, and so you don't expect them to go quarterback early in this draft. But if you're just looking at it from Tua's perspective and how he plays the position and the offense that he's familiar with, there's a lot of similarities between what they're going to be doing under Joe Brady and what Tua was doing under Steve Sarkisian. You look at a lot of sort of RPO-type stuff with some quick, easy reads, guys running to space, things like that. I think that would be a good fit. But Miami works, too. I mean, when you look at the offense that they're putting together, when you look at how they're going to be, you know, using the spread, using the RPOs, you know, getting the ball out of the quarterback's hands quickly, you know, trying to maximize yardage after the catch, you know, that's still Tua's game as well. And so, yeah, I think both of those teams fit for him.
I mean, Teddy Bridgewater suffered the fate of becoming Sam Darnold's backup real quick. So, yep. I mean, it could happen. I know the money's ridiculous, but, I mean, you're signing a free agent quarterback. That's what you expect. I mean, right. Joe Brady and Teddy Bridgewater. Yeah, go ahead.
I mean, you might be looking at Bridgewater as your guy now, but I don't think it precludes you from a guy 2 years from now. And so, especially if you're looking at, you know, Tua as somebody that might be sort of a medical redshirt, like, you're going to need somebody this year. And,
this
is more from Tua's perspective. I think now Carolina probably goes a different direction, which leads us to Miami. But I think he would work in Miami, too.
So, I've really just said Justin Herbert to the Chargers since, I mean, that's what everybody that I talked to that was at the combine, and now I'm talking to you, so we'll see how you feel about it, thinks Justin Herbert to the Chargers is a lock.
Yeah, I think so, too. I mean, and, you know, with the fact that they're saying that they're going to roll out Tyrod Taylor each, you think, look, they're looking at Justin Herbert, and they think he can play right away. And, you know, you're looking at, and this Chargers offense, you know, their new offensive coordinator, somebody that's in that sort of Coryell coaching tree, like he dates back to Rod Chudzinski, who was obviously a Coryell disciple. You know, the thing with Justin Herbert that stands out, of course, is the arm talent, the ability to make some downfield throws, some back shoulder throws in the vertical passing game, you know, using leverage and things like that. I think that the Chargers will be a perfect offense for him. I think it's an offense he could run quickly. You know, maybe he's not ready to start week one, but he's probably ready to start, say, week six, week seven. So, yeah, I think you could probably pencil or even put pen in, you know, when you're filling out your mock draft, Herbert to the Chargers at six.
I agree there, and I do think he will do well to Anthony Lynn, and now he's actually going to have weapons. He's hard to evaluate because you watch him on film, and, I mean, I know how he is on pressure. He reminds me of Goff at Cal when he gets pressured, but, I mean, he didn't have the weapons at Oregon. And then you got Keenan Allen, Hunter Henry, Mike Williams. Yeah, totally different story there now. So it's fun to project him, how he's going to be the next level. But Jordan Love, I think Saints now. I mean, there's a couple other teams you could throw in there, but I would like to see him with Sean Payton after Drew Brees steps down.
Yeah, I mean, I think that's an ideal situation with Jordan Love. You know, I think before they made this trade and this move, I think Indianapolis was going to be a good situation for Jordan Love. I think wherever Love ends up, the thing that matters most for him is that proven track record of quarterback development. You know, because I think when you get to, say, Love and Eason, now that's where the true track record of developing quarterbacks is going to matter. And so I look at guys like Frank Reich, like Sean Payton, like Bruce Arians, like guys that have shown that they can develop and groom quarterbacks and, you know, coach them up a bit in this league, that's where Love's going to need to go. I think he's a very scheme-diverse quarterback. I think he can run vertical stuff. I think he can run quick game stuff. I'm not concerned from an X's and O's standpoint. It's more that coaching standpoint, which is why I think, like you said, Connor, like New Orleans makes a ton of sense. Some of those other teams like Tampa Bay, Indianapolis, not that they would do it, but Philadelphia. Like, teams like that have showed they can, you know, coach up a quarterback, they make sense for him.
We talked about Jacob Eason, Tampa Bay, Indianapolis. You can go on. Yeah, we talked about Jay Fromm. You described him pretty well. So let's just end it with Jalen Hurts, because I think a lot of everybody knows his name. I would like Oakland. I think him and John Gruden can do something. Tennessee is another team that I could really see him and Arthur Smith growing together and replacing Tannehill, because to me that contract is, we need Tannehill for two seasons and then we got somebody else that can come in. So I could see him sitting behind doing that. What do you think?
Yeah, I mean, I think the Raiders make a ton of sense. You know, when you look at where Jalen Hurts is as a quarterback, how he's developed over the past couple of years, the strengths to his game. I think Tennessee is almost an ideal situation for him, because he wouldn't have to play right away. You wouldn't expect him to. So we can sort of develop, you know, the things that he needs to work on, say some accuracy issues, some process and speed issues, and you have time to do that. You know, I look at, believe it or not, the Tampa Bay Buccaneers. And, you know, when I was watching Hurts down in Mobile for the Senior Bowl and watching his throwing session at the Combine, I'm coming around to the idea of Hurts as more of a downfield passer, a vertical-based passer.
He Agreed.
Throws with touch pretty well, drops into the bucket really well. And so I look at, you know, when you look at Tennessee, you can figure some shot plays off of play action to take advantage of that. But I think Bruce Arians in that vertical-based offense would be an environment where he could sort of thrive and really cater to his strengths as a passer right now while filling in some of the other stuff around it. And so, you know, all these teams make sense. Vegas, you know, Tennessee, you know, Tampa Bay. But the rise of Burrow is real, obviously. Mm-hmm. But I think the rise of Hurts is real, too. You know, I think he's really shown over this sort of pre-draft process, you know, that he's trended in the right direction. A lot of people, you know, say before the Senior Bowl were thinking, he's a day three guy. He's probably played himself into the second round now. And what's interesting in the strange environment we're in right now, he's coming off a great performance at the Combine. You know, he crushed it when he met with teams. You know, people are going to love him from a, you know, a character perspective. So he's on a high note right now. And now with things getting sort of locked down before the draft, a lot of people's like lingering memories of the draft process of the Combine are going to be how well Jalen Hurts did. And so would it surprise me to see come, you know, day two of the draft, he comes off the board at like 44, 45, 46? Not at all. And if we get a crazy scenario where a quarterback we're not thinking leaks into the first round, somebody comes up maybe into the back of the first round to get that fifth-year option, and they do it for Jalen Hurts, would it surprise me at all?
Yeah, it wouldn't surprise me either, because he does have the tools. It's really just developing him and his footwork and reading the defense. If he gets those, if you got a coach that can fix that with him, he's going to be a starting quarterback in this league. I wholeheartedly believe that. I love his Oklahoma film. It's so enjoyable. Mark Schofield, NFL Wire, Sports Media, USA Today, Sports Media Group. I greatly appreciate you coming on, my man. We had a great conversation. It was long, but we got everything covered. I think people are going to love it.
I think so too, Connor. It's always great to talk to somebody that knows what they're talking about. You do such great work. You know, big fan of what you're doing. Thanks for having me on, man. Try to enjoy the strange days we're living in, and it's been a blast.
Appreciate it, my man. Be safe.
You too, man.